Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Sense right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your co-host. And of course, I'd like to welcome back the amazing Alistair Milroy from Breaking the Mold Accounting. How are you, Alistair?
I'm good, Rhea. Yeah, really well. Thanks. How are you? Looking
good.
Forward to the Farmer Boat Show this week?
Yeah, well, you know, it's now that season. MIBA's happening right now. And then, of course, Palma Boat Show, this MIBA in Barcelona, then Palma Boat Show this coming weekend. And the season's kicking off. I mean, I think Palma Boat Show is really, for the Mediterranean season, usually the one that, signals to the world it's the Med season.
Very much. And I know, talking to people in the industry, the boat yards are very busy at the moment, and everybody's gearing up for the season. Talking to suppliers, trying to get hold of water sports toys and things. It's definitely ramping up. It's looking like it's going to be a good season, which is great news.
Oh, I tell you. Well, I mean, mind you, the yachting industry has been booming for the past 3 years. COVID, no COVID, it didn't matter. I think COVID was actually what sent yachting and boating into the stratosphere, as it were, as a result of, you know, people wanting to get out. And the only way they could do that was, you know, get on a yacht or a boat. So it'll be interesting to see. I know that the Mediterranean had some misgivings a couple of months back when we had the political situation take place within Europe. But we'll see. I don't think it's going to impact the Med that much.
No, I think it's going to be busy. I expect the Western Med might be busier than the Eastern Med with I've seen a few more warnings and war zone exclusions being expanded in insurance policies over the last week or so. So, but I think that for the Western Med, it's going to be busy.
Well, and I have seen news reports that, it is affecting Turkey's season. So, Turkey and Greece were becoming the winners because they were so much cheaper to go to, than the Western Med. But this year, I don't think they're going to see as much. Well, Turkey definitely isn't going to see as much as it would have in previous years. But of course, such close proximity and the area, it makes sense.
Yeah, last year, I think Turkey really benefited. Yeah, didn't they? For a lot of yachts went that side, and outside of the EU, it gives you a bit more flexibility with what you do with your charter income, etc. So,
yeah. Yeah, well,
yeah,
remains to be seen. So what are we talking about this week? I came across something just the other day on company growth. And I'm seeing a lot of companies within the yachting industry, they start off with a couple people or one person, and then they take steps and steps. And I don't think a lot of people are really prepared properly when their business starts to boom. There's many different things. It affects your valuation as a company, your taxation, your organization, how you manage the people. There's so many things that you have to think of. And I think that so many people think, oh, just my business, when it grows and I have more people working for me, it's going to make it easier. But that isn't necessarily the case, is it? Because it adds heaps more work.
I think the challenges change, and I think for most business owners, it means at some point recognizing that you know, when you start up, you're working very much in the business; it's yours, and you're speaking to the clients, and you're the face of it, and doing most of the work. As it grows, and you can't scale up based on just yourself. So as you start bringing more people in, and then having to sort of rely on them and make them responsible, that's quite a first change. I think, when you get probably to 50 or 100,000 turnover, then going up to 250, you've got to start stepping out of doing the work yourself and actually working on the business rather than working in the business. Having a plan, I think, and starting to rethink about where you want to go, is very important, and then how you're going to achieve it, because it certainly takes a very different skill set. And you see this with businesses that are successful and float off, that often the entrepreneur steps out of the CEO role as the business becomes more of a corporate machine, because it's a different skill set.
Well, and let me ask you, I mean, a lot of the times when you start looking at, you get to the point where you need employees or you need people to work with you, What is the difference between working with, say, contracting somebody or employing someone? Which is better when you're just getting to that growth stage?
I think it depends on what type of role it is. I think using an executive probably is a first stage as someone's growing their business and needs more time. I think you really got to focus on what are the things that you're doing that really aren't valuable for your time. You know, if there's stuff that you're doing that someone could do for 5 or 10 euros now, then you shouldn't be doing it. So bringing someone in, and a virtual assistant or as a VA or an executive assistant can be
so more on a contract,
really useful.
Sort of, yeah, rather than employee, yeah, part, contractual, I mean, basis.
I think certainly when you're a sole practitioner, that gives you a bit more, you know, flexibility around. There's also that, you know, taking on employees is a big commitment for any business. And you don't want to take someone on and then, until you're sure the revenue is growing. So I think initially that contract type role works very well. I think as you need to actually bring people in to deliver your products or services, and maybe in sales roles or that sort of thing, then you probably need to bring employees in. I think a lot of that's actually giving them, empowering them, and being able to give them a responsibility to take on those roles and do it without you having to still be responsible whilst they do the work. Because I think that's where a lot of owners end up getting dragged back into the business and working in the business rather than really getting the value from their staff. And that's about creating the right culture, having the right systems and training in place that you can deliver the service that you'd like to deliver personally, but you can make sure that's consistent across the businesses as you're no longer involved.
Well, I guess there comes a breaking point, doesn't there? Like, you know, you're contracting people for this, this, and this, but at some stage that becomes more expensive than just hiring an employee, doesn't it?
It can do. I think, obviously, you know, when you take on an employee, you're taking on a lot. You know, with a contractor, you're paying either for an hour or for certain deliverables, and it's not usually fairly definable. With an employee, you're having to pay for their holidays and taxes, and you know, you're taking there's a lot more costs than just the salary going out each month. So you need to make sure you're getting the value from that, and part of that's having the right processes and training in place to make sure that they are equipped to do the job, the work that you want them to do.
How does that work? Like most companies, how does that work for most companies? You know, you start off as an entrepreneur, as you know, sole trader, for example, and you get to a certain amount of income. You know, I know in Canada, you can earn up to, say, for example, $20,000 before they actually implement taxes. Does that work in most countries as well?
Yeah, there's normally thresholds, particularly for sales, your VAT and or goods and services taxes, depending on where you are. There's normally a threshold of turnover where you have to register for those. So that's worth keeping an eye on. And there's also that will change your accounting. You know, as a small business, you maybe elect to just account on a cash basis, which means you're recognizing your income when you get paid and your expenses when you pay them. As you get bigger, normally you'll be expected to go to what's called an accruals basis, where you're actually paying tax on your invoices, whether or not they've been settled. I think that's a crucial as you grow, in particular rapid growth. You've got to be careful that growth coming with the right profit margins as well, that you're not, risking over trading, which is, you're seeing your sales go up, but actually if your sales aren't priced properly and you're not making the profit margin on, then arguably you're not really adding anything to your business. There's no point doing lots of sales if they're not profitable sales and you're discounting, for instance. So I think pricing is extremely important for any business growing.
How do you figure out pricing? Like, how, if it's service, for example, how do you figure out how to charge for that service?
That's a good long debate, and historically a lot of people have paid on time, particularly in service industries, accounting, you know, professional services particularly have always been time-based industries. There's a big problem with that for businesses, is that actually you're limited in the amount of time that you have. So if you're charging on an hourly basis, there's only so many hours you can work. And the only way you can increase that revenue is then bringing more people in to have more people working more hours. There's also no connection often with the way that time is spent and the efficiencies in your business. So it's not very fair to customers. You know, if they're paying for your time, but your time's not efficient, then they're probably going to have an argument or complaint about that at some point. So I think, you know, figuring out where your value is and you know, understanding your cost base. And again, you're going to have your fixed costs, which if you're renting premises and things, the insurance, those sort of costs, you know what they are and they're going to be covered. So you've got to factor those in, and then you've got to look at what are the additional costs that come in and how do they increase as you do more work. And I think for services businesses, being efficient is critical. Having systems in place so the people as you bring employees on, they're trained in a way that you want to deliver the services that you're doing. They don't have scope creep where they start offering or doing something for someone and it's not actually in the fee. So having ways of capturing that and then pricing it.
Well, as an accountant, is that something that you're capable of working with a company to do? Say, for example, say I came to you and I said, look, here's what I do. These are my numbers. This is what I offer. Is there, you know, some sort of calculation that an accountant can say, apply to it all and say, this is what you need to charge for this, this, and this, and you know, so that it's the way it should be? Or is it just a guessing game?
No, I think obviously you need to, well, not obviously, the key is having the right data in the first place. If you've got the financial data, so I would start by looking at what data we've got and getting a business's financial processes robust, that you know you've got reliable financial information, and then you can start looking and saying, well, what if we rent another premises or take on three staff? You know, how's that going to impact? And a lot of the software allows accountants to do that sort of scenario modeling, but you've got to have the base data in place. And I think also what's really important for any business owner is actually understanding, you know, what do they want? What is their personal vision for the business? What do they want out of the business? What's their, not just the business vision, but their personal vision? Because not everybody wants to grow to, 100 staff. Some people might be quite happy working in a business of 5 people. So understanding, you know, what people are trying to achieve and what the balance is in their lifestyle, I think is also important for any accountant to understand in then building the business that's going to support that vision.
Through our conversations, it's interesting because I'm learning a lot. I hope the viewer is as well, but I'm definitely learning a lot. It's almost as if an accountant is your business partner. You know, the one that really, you know, if you're the creative type and you've got sort of visions of doing whatever, the accountant is more like, you know, the solid one that says no or curbs you or pulls you back or sends you in the right direction or tells you what you, it's almost like a business partner.
I say that is what a good accountant should be. You're very much part of a business, understand what you're trying to achieve in your personal vision, and then hold a business owner, to some account around, or, what are your goals and are you achieving those things that are going to get, the steps that are there to get to those goals, whether that's growing revenue, every business, whatever your vision is for your business, you have to make profit to be able to deliver that vision. If you want to do good in the world, your businesses are going to help you do that, or deliver that vision if it's profitable. And I think that's a big key. And I think also for a lot of small businesses and startups, when you're it's tempting to discount prices to take clients on at the start. So there's often a stage where you've got to look at your client base and say, right, well, where am I making, where, not just who's the most profitable, or who's earning the most revenue out, but which one of those are profitable? Which ones do you enjoy working with? Where can you add, more value in their relationships, and looking at the pricing around that as well. Because I think certainly as businesses, grow, and it's natural, you take on a client when you're small and you don't have the overheads and maybe you don't have the staff, and you think, well, I can price that at this price. And then as you grow and you have maybe an office and more staff and things, that pricing probably isn't as realistic, and there comes a time where you need to have those discussions with clients and say, I need to increase the fees. And I think that's a natural stage that every business goes through.
Well, we're going to have a chat after this.
No, we will. Kidding. No, I think it really is important for every business to look at their pricing and where the value is for their clients.
That's interesting, because, that is, I guess, one thing that, as an entrepreneur, and this isn't my first rodeo either. I think, as I said before, I owned a company prior, and that was always my biggest struggle, was trying to figure out as I grew. My prior company, I had 10 employees. So it was completely different than what I do now, because now what I do is I have contractors. So it was like night and day. But my biggest struggle always was what to charge for your services, because you want to be valued and you want to show the value. And you do want to grow your business, maybe not to 100 employees, but, 10, 15, 20 employees, or maybe even 50. And some might want to grow their company to 10,000 employees and take over other companies. It's all up to the person. But how to fairly and accurately price your product, as it were, that was always my biggest struggle in both of my businesses.
Yeah, I think pricing and how to price is, if you're selling physical goods, then there's probably, then there's normally maybe a markup, or what's the ranges or what other people are selling for. I think with services, it's a bit more difficult. I think there's two keys, is being making sure you're efficient in your processes, particularly in the service industry. So really looking at how can you make the processes understandable and also scalable as you take on 5-10 employees, that everybody's producing the right quality of work, that you and the customers are getting the right level of services. And it's not an exact science. And I think you do need to look at what are you trying to achieve, and put the right measurements in place to say, right, if everybody does these things, and there might be some of that will be customer service led. How quickly do you get back to people? How is work checked to make sure the quality control is in there before it goes out to a client? How much of fees are someone in the team invoices each month? It's building those things up, and then knowing, right, if those key performance indicators are met, then the business will be profitable. And then they're not always going to be met. So then it's looking with those employees at, well, why is it a training issue? Is it a process issue? What's causing, where's that gap that needs to be fixed?
Well, the thing is, once you find that sweet spot, then of course you start getting into the employees I think I've learned a lot, but it also makes me realize how important it is to have an accountant by your side, because, when you actually start thinking about well, I'd like to employ somebody to do, say, for example, production, or I'd like to employ someone to be my PA. Then that takes it to a whole different level, because before you were just looking at, okay, well, I have to pay for my platforms. I have to pay for, you know, the basics, the electricity, the water, the whatever, in order to function, internet. But that doesn't come with a whole new level of responsibility where you have to put your submissions, whatever the government expects when you have an employee, you've got to pay, you know, employee benefits, et cetera. That just goes to another new level, and that's setting up different accounts. And, you know, it's, I know people have done it, but it's not easy.
No, and it's, and I think down to, you know, what you can claim, you know, what's deductible for tax, and making sure A, that you're not claiming things you shouldn't be claiming, and that's going to cause you a problem. But also, and you do see this where businesses have been doing their tax returns and tax themselves, and they, you know, suddenly realise they've missed out on, you know, thousands of pounds of or euros of deductions because they've missed things that they could have claimed on their tax, and they haven't. And I think we've spoken about, you know, even cash flow basis, you know, being aware of what your tax bill is going to be and having that, those, you know, keeping that cash back, and, you know, separating what's personal and what's business, and putting that discipline in place, I think is where an accountant can very much help business owners.
Well, all I can say is, from my point of view, if you have a business or even an individual that are working in something like sales or something that requires you to do traveling or, you know, cars, et cetera, it will cost you way more money not getting a proper accountant than it will to go to your local cheap tax person, just for the simple fact that there are so many different hidden things that you just don't understand. And I don't care what country you're in, every single country has a ton of hidden little things that if you've got a proper accountant, can do the best job for you. And if you just do it on the cheap, you're probably missing out on so much money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And there's also, you know, there's accountants who, it might be that you, you know, how you structure when you need new capital. If you want to grow, how do you buy something? Do you, is it best to borrow? Is it best to look at getting private investors? How do you structure that? What's your business worth?
Yeah, all like leases, or a lease for a car, yeah, or buying a car. Yeah. Do you rent an office or do you buy an office? It's, you know, your equipment. Do you lease a computer? Do you buy the computer? Yeah, there's a lot of sort of pitfalls, I think, that you can fall into if you don't realize exactly what the tax implications are at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also understanding your personal, you know, as a business owner, what your personal tax position is as well, and you know, planning that between your, from your business into your personal, you know, things like retirement.
Yeah, that case, for a Canadian, I can work as me up until a certain amount. And then after that, I have to incorporate. But then you're talking about two stacks of taxes, because then you have to do your personal and you have to do it. Just it, the bigger a company gets, the more complicated the entire process gets.
Yeah, it does. And yeah, things, just managing your suppliers, managing your clients, you know, making sure you're being paid for, paid on time, but also making sure you're being paid for all the work that you're doing. It's very easy to see scope creep where, you know, we all want to help our clients, or a client, you know, a customer comes and asks for something else, and it's very easy to say, so we want happy clients, so we'll help them, but actually not price that into their services. So having systems around to capture those, you know, it's great. You want to help the client, you want to add more services to the work, but you also need to make sure you're invoicing and catching that in your revenue.
Well, Alistair, I have to say, every time we have a conversation, it's absolutely fascinating. I know it's not all the bells and whistles and you know, a bunch of yachts flying by the water and that kind of thing, but when we're talking business and you are looking to upscale and you're looking to do the right things and feel valued. I think that's probably one of the biggest things as a business owner, that sometimes you feel undervalued. And more than likely, from the sounds of it, it's because you're undervaluing yourself. It's not that anybody else is undervaluing you. It's you doing it to yourself.
Yeah, I think we all have imposter syndrome. I think, where, you know, am I really doing this? Am I good enough to do this? I think that's a fairly natural place for lots of business owners to have. And yeah, how we value ourselves, I think, very much comes through on the way we price and having that confidence to price for the services that we're delivering. It's definitely something that takes time, and it takes a skill to, you know, to communicate with clients as well. When a client says, well, can I have a discount? Or you get a friend of a friend who's referred to you and, you know, expects, or there's an expectation, or you feel as a business owner that you should be giving them a better rate. I think preparing and having the ability to have those conversations is really important. And, you know, going through your client base annually and you know, rating them is, you know, grading your clients, if you like, as what who's really profitable, and then looking at, you know, ones which maybe aren't a good fit for your business, because often, you know, there's always that 80-20 rule that, you know, 80% of your revenue is coming from 20% of your clients. Yeah. But if you're spending a lot of time, you know, I was talking to someone actually in the wine trade the other day, and he was saying he realized that, you know, he had a client which was causing huge amounts of work and worry and hassle. At the end, it was, you know, when he calculated it out and took the tax off and everything else, net, it was probably giving him something like 80 euros a week. And it was a very easy decision to say, no, I don't need that risk of not being paid and not, you know, having that client in for, it seemed like it, you know, when you looked at the revenue, it's like, can I afford to lose them? But actually, when you went right through it and the amount of time he was spending on it, it was an exit case. And I think that's important. Just to cap off, I mean, as well with yachts, you know, we're talking about very expensive assets. And I think having the right, if you put a 20 million, 30 million euro yacht, you know, whether it's, if you had that as a property or a business, you want to make sure you had the proper accounting advice and financial advice around it. And I think sometimes we, because it's an aspirational purchase, and because it's personal and it's very much about your free time, sometimes that financial discipline isn't forefront of people's mind.
Yeah. True enough. Well, Alistair, I've got to say thank you very much. As usual, it's been very, very interesting and informative.
Thank you, Rhea. It's been a pleasure.
Right. So you've been listening to another edition of Talking Sense right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. And of course, thanks to Alistair Milroy from Breaking the Mold Accounting, my co-host, for all the valuable information weekly. We'll see you again next week.